Okay, tonight is Wednesday, June 28th. This is the women's Mishnah share. We're on the 8th parak of Maseches Chulin.
Okay, Rabotai. Okay, Rabotai. There are plenty of them. Plenty of them.
There you go. Sorry.
Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. We've been reading literally line by line of this Gemara, and each time a new principle was introduced. Last time we learned the issue about, I think it was 2 weeks ago, with the cheese making process. How halachically do we understand the making of cheese when the way you make cheese is by taking the maw of the stomach and the maw of the cow, one of its stomachs, and place it into a huge vat of milk? It should be basa b'chalav, and we read the shach, the principle that he established. We're going to see a brand new principle tonight. It's very difficult to understand, but nonetheless, the Gemara does present it, and then we'll read the Rambam, his two or three halachot that will hopefully summarize everything that we did on this particular daf concerning the issue of basa b'chalav thus far. So I just want to start with where it's bracketed Amar Rav, because when we continue, the Gemara is going to be challenging it. So if you remember correctly, the Mishnah had stated that if you have a drop of milk fall onto one piece of meat in a pot that contains many pieces of meat, and you did not stir the pot, so now the piece of milk, the drop of milk, will be absorbed somehow in that piece of meat. The way the Mishnah said we determine whether we eat it or not, Beefsteak Charlie takes a bite out of the meat. If he notices the milk, you're not allowed to eat it. If he says it tastes purely like meat, you're allowed to eat it. So now Rav said, Amar Rav, Kevan shenasan ta'am b'chaticha, once beefsteak has said that piece of meat tastes like milk, once beefsteak said that, chaticha atzma na'aseit nivela ve'oseret kol hachatichot kulan v'lei shehein mina. This one piece of meat now becomes as if it were real nivela. The drop of milk mixed into this one piece of meat creates that the entire piece of meat is now a prohibited piece of meat, as if it would be non-kosher. So make believe there's a non-kosher piece of meat in this pot, and it's cooking away with kosher pieces of meat. So this non-kosher piece of meat, which obviously you can't recognize any longer, if you could recognize it, you would just pick it up and throw it out. But you can't. So now, it prohibits all of the other pieces of meat, even if there were 1,000 pieces of meat in this pot, they're all prohibited. Why? And Rabbi Yehuda is going to explain. Because meat and meat are never batel. When you have a mixture of two similar or identical products, the only difference is that one is prohibited and the other 999 are permissible. That type of a mixture is never subject to bitul. Because bitul, according to Rav, is predicated upon the fact that the taste of the permissible items in the pot overpower the non-permissible agent. Overpower. So when you have two different types of foods, you are experts in that. You know that what? That one can overpower the other. But when you're dealing with identical items, a piece of meat and a piece of meat, the taste is never overpowered. Why is it never overpowered? Because it's a piece of steak. One piece of steak cannot cancel out the taste of another piece of steak. Therefore, the concept of bitul, according to Rav, who will cite Rabbi Yehuda as his basis, does not exist when the mixture in the pot is what's called min bimino.
So, where does the Nosein Tam come from?
He says only when it's a min b'she'eino mino. When you have two different types of items.
So
milk is not meat.
Right. So that can give no...
Good. Exactly.
Meat. Now the meat is meat.
Correct.
Not meat and
correct. So if beefsteak were to were to taste any piece of meat, what do you think he's going to say it tastes like?
Meat.
Meat. He's not going to say this tastes like kosher meat, this tastes like non-kosher meat. How is he supposed to know that?
Was deemed not okay because he deemed it to taste...
Correct.
...not like meat, but like... something meat with milk.
That's correct.
So it's really not exactly limiting milk. It's like a buttery piece of meat.
That's correct. But he tasted it. But you didn't pull it out of the pot right away. And when you... Exactly. Or if it got...
It was no Saint Tom.
That's correct. It was no Saint Tom. Correct. But you have no way of guaranteeing that the concept of I am going to overpower taste only applies the very first time. The milk unto the meat. But once that meat is now classified as a prohibited piece of meat, the rest of the pieces of meat in this pot are just meat and meat. Meat and meat, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is never, and Rav, is never subject to bitul. So Rav's opinion is created by two chidushim. The Gemara is going to attack one of them in a second. Two chidushim. One, that the drop of milk that falls onto piece number one of meat, and now you can notice its taste, what happens to that piece of meat?
It becomes an
avela. It becomes an avela. So it's as if it was an animal, it's as if it came from an animal that died from a non-kosher shechita. It's completely nevela. It's not that it's asur because it has milk and meat together. No, that started it. But once it is discernible, the milk, the rest of the piece of meat is now called, it's nevela. No, you don't concern yourself any longer with the fact that it was only a drop of milk. The whole piece is now nevela. Once it's now nevela, cooking away with other pieces of meat, and you cannot recognize it, under those circumstances, what happens is, every piece of meat in this pot has to be thrown in the garbage, or sold to a Gentile. Mipnei shehein mina. I told you that this is, the Gemara is going to say it in a second. Omar le mar Zutra berei de Rav Mari le Ravina. Rav Zutra, the son of Rav Mari, said to Ravina, Michte, let us see. Rav kiman omar lishma'ate. Who did Rav establish this last halacha according to? Ki Rabbi Yehuda. De Omar min bimino lo batil. If you have a mixture of what? Of what? Two of the same things, it can never be batel. So if I have, for example, matzah, that's not kosher for Pesach. There are matzos, it says on the package, not for Passover use. And on Pesach, I had five pieces of kosher LePesach matzah in the pot, and one, I realized, oh my God, I took out of this box of non-kosher meat, non-kosher matzah. Well, the taste of matzah, whether it's kosher LePesach or not kosher LePesach, is pretty much the same. What will Rabbi Yehuda say to the entire pot? Everything is not kosher. Why? The concept of bitul cannot apply by min bimino. And logically, he is 100% correct. 100% correct. Why do the Chachamim argue with him? Why, the Chachamim say that min bimino is batel, not based on overpowering its taste. Because there is a halacha of rov. That's what the Chachamim say. That according to Torah law, if you have, I mentioned this last time, if you have one piece of meat that falls into a pot, one piece of meat that's not kosher, and falls into a pot with two others that are kosher, and I can't recognize which is not kosher, all three of them are permitted to be eaten. Because we base it on rov. That's on a d'oraita level. We will see later the Rambam, and the Rambam says that rabbinic law says you should even try, you should try to get shishim against the prohibited piece of meat. Even though it's got nothing to do with taste, don't rely on rov, just rely on shishim even for that. But let's talk about on a d'oraita level, which our Gemara is operating on. So as long as there is 2-1, you're allowed to eat it. And it has nothing to do with the physical fact that you are overpowering the taste. You are not overpowering the taste because three pieces of steak or two pieces of kosher steak cannot overpower the taste of the non-kosher steak. It can't. Physically, it can't happen. So why are you allowed to eat it? Because that's not what the Torah says. That's the halacha of rov. That's the halacha of rov. And we apply rov in hundreds of cases in Jewish law. But I want to introduce two different types of rov, which I know I've mentioned in other occasions as well. There are two types of rov. There is a rov which is de'ita kaman. Ita, Aleph, Yud, Tuf, Aleph. The Ita Kaman. It's right in front of your nose. The majority can be identified. The standard case is there is a square, a meat market. All of the butcher shops are centered in this meat market. 6 sell kosher meat, 4 sell non-kosher meat. You find a piece of meat in the middle of the square. The halacha is you're supposed to go to each butcher shop and ask, did you lose this piece of meat? If none of them can identify it, you're allowed to eat it. Why? Because we say it came from the majority. That's the halacha. No one argues with that halacha. It came from the majority. But you can see store number 1 kosher, store number 2 non-kosher, 3, 4, 5 kosher, 6 not kosher. You can see them, you can count them, you can identify them. Then there is another type of rov, which is called ruba, a rov, deleta, lamid, yud, tuf, aleph. Deleta means it's not in front of you. It's a statistical majority. But you have never determined and counted the actual numbers. A statistical majority. The fact that if you have an animal that was slaughtered by a person who you know is a reliable Shomer Shabbat, but we don't know if he knows anything about Shechita. And he's not here. You're supposed to ask him. But I just don't know. He's not around. The halach is, once again, you're allowed to eat that piece of meat. Why? Because rov people who slaughter animals know what they're doing. It's pretty true. Rove people, most people who claim that they are shochtim, know what they're doing. And if they're trustworthy, you can trust them. No one went ahead and counted that there are 783 shochtim in the United States, and 390 of them happen to be, you know, knowledgeable and experts. Nobody made that count. I'll give you the Gemara's case. That's one of the Gemara's. There's another Gemara's case. You have a woman who married somebody, and her husband died. No children. The brother who is supposed to do Yibum is a minor. Is a minor. So, what's supposed to happen? What's supposed to happen?
You have to wait.
Are you supposed to wait or not? Or let's say the other case. The wife is a minor. It's even better. There's the wife who was married to somebody. She got married at age 6. Her father married her off, as Torah law allows. And her husband died a year later. Can the older brother, who is 15... married or 25, can he marry this 7-year-old girl or not?
He has to.
Yes, but does she have to wait until she becomes a bat mitzvah girl or not? There's a machloikis. Rabbi Meir says, I'm always concerned about minority. Choshishin lemi'uta. So I'm introducing Rabbi Meir because we never mentioned him yet in Maseches Chulin. Rabbi Meir says, I know what the Torah says if you follow the majority, that I'm always worried about the minority. And here, in this case, I have an option. What's he worried about? Maybe she will not physically mature and never be capable of having a child. If she's not capable of having a child, what's the use of having Yibum? The purpose of Yibum is to have a child, name the baby after the husband, and the husband, that child takes the estate of the departed husband. Takes the estate. So Rabbi Meir says, I don't follow majority. The majority are the Chachamim who say, she can get married tomorrow morning. Why? Because the majority of women, Baruch Hashem, have children. The majority of women have. There are some who are not privileged. But the majority do. So according to the Chachamim, you can get married, you know, 2 days later. Rabbi Meir says no. Now, the Chachamim didn't do a statistical count and see how many women have been got married in this world and how many of them ultimately had a child. It's an observation that you make. But we rely on both types of rov. A rov that you can count, like in the Sanhedrin, which the Pasuk is talking about. In the Sanhedrin, judge number one said guilty, judge number two said guilty, judge number three said innocent, and so on and so forth. So you count. And when you have a majority, you make a decision. That you can count. That's one type of rov. Then there is the other rove, which is not visible, not accurate. It's a statistical majority, which we believe is indeed accurate. The Chachamim say, we always follow the rove. Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, but not by min b'mino. Min b'mino, and that's what Rav says. Therefore, that one piece of meat, which had the little drop of milk on it. And beefsteak said, yes, tastes like what? Tastes like... And now somebody threw it back into the pot again and I can't recognize it. Impossible. And beefsteak's not here again to taste it. All of the pieces of meat are now prohibited. Chaticha na'aseit nevela. The piece of meat becomes a regular piece of nevela. Okay? Now we're going to continue something which we never heard of before, and it's hard for me to explain it logically. Says the Gemara, Lema Pliga Adarava. Let us suggest that this statement, which I just said 2 minutes ago, that one piece of meat prohibits everything else in the pot, disagrees, Lema Pliga disagrees, Adarava. The Amar Rava once said, Karsavar Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that if there are several things in this pot, not just meat and meat, but there's meat and vegetables. You're cooking a stew in this pot. A stew. And as you were cooking the stew, one drop of milk fell on one piece of meat. Okay? One drop of milk. So you got lots of other meat in this pot and lots of other vegetables in this pot. So based on what we said 5 seconds ago, what is the status of all of the meat? All the meat is prohibited. But Rava doesn't say that. He cites Rabbi Yehuda Kasavar, Kol Shehu Min Umino V'davar Acher. If there are three things in this pot, three things, the milk, the piece of meat upon which the milk fell, other pieces of kosher meat, and lots of vegetables, davar acher. So what do? Salek et mino, kemisha eino, throw out the meat, the other pieces of meat in this pot, not the one as the upon which the drop of milk fell. You throw all the other pieces of meat out and make believe it's not here. You don't have to throw them out. You just make believe they are not there. So if you now enter Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, that's what he's doing. He enters Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, most boring person who ever lived, Mr. Rogers. So, did you watch the show with your kids?
Absolutely.
Of course. And he took off his shoes and put on the sneakers. And then we go into the world of make-believe. That's correct. So make-believe the meat doesn't exist. And now, ladies, what's left in the pot? All the vegetables. Now, are vegetables and meat, the meat that fell, is that min b'mino, min b'sheino mino? Min b'sheino mino. Good. So the vegetables will now overpower, as long as we don't have any beefsteak, so what do we have to measure? If there are 60 times more vegetable than what? Than the one single piece of meat. If there is, says Rava in the name of Rabbi Huda, what happens? Everything in this pot is permissible. Everything in this pot is permissible. Even the first piece of meat upon which the milk fell. What? No, it says salik. It means it means salik kemisha eno. Remove it as if you removed it. Take it out of the equation. That's why I said it's the world of make believe. It's sitting there in the pot, but make believe discounted exactly. So the only thing that I have to worry about in this pot is min b'she'eino mino. A piece of meat that had what? A drop of milk against carrots and potatoes and so on and so forth. And now I have a simple halacha. I take the law of Bitul, and since there is 60 times more of all those vegetables than that one little piece of meat, it overpowers it, and now everything in this pot is permissible. Do I have any logic for it? No, I can't explain logically how I can understand how Mr. Rogers plays make-believe, but I can't understand how Rava just says, ignore it. I just can't really explain it.
Can I ask you about the intersection between Gimel and Grove? Where they intersect.
They have nothing to do with one another.
But they hear you're just saying yes.
Because Rove is 2-1.
Right, but
Bittel needs a ratio, 60-1.
So
it's a very big difference.
And with Rove, there's no mean the mean out. There could be all different meat that looks exactly the same at a butcher store.
That's
so
correct.
So there's not. Why does that concept not apply to Rove?
According to whom? See, Rav, who said that min b'mino,
yeah,
that's where there's a mixture of 5 pieces of meat. One that's not, 1,000 pieces of meat. One that's not kosher, and 999 that are.
No, what about
the piece of meat that you find on the street, that's only one piece of meat. That's not a question of bittul.
No, that's rogue because it's stored.
Could.
So it's a percentage of store.
Correct. That's right. Got nothing to do with bittul. Rove and bittul are two separate halachot. Nothing to do with one another. Rove means we follow the majority. Bittul does not mean we follow the majority. 59 times to 1.
If that one piece of meat with the milk is that's the minority. So why can't you go by that?
Also, it's
because. But I mean, what's it mixed with?
Other pieces of meat there.
So Rabbi Yehuda says. Good, so Rabbi Yehuda says you can't be mivat. That's it, there is no such thing, and I don't follow the rove in this case.
Mm-hmm.
The Chachamim say follow rove.
Okay.
So 2-1 would be enough.
There's no union of hefsed here at all.
We're not talking about hefsed. We're talking about alpidin. The halacha is, no matter how much it's going to cost you, you've got to throw the whole thing out. According to Rabbi Yehuda. According to this Rabbi Yehuda, you have to throw nothing out. So the Gemara is citing 2 different traditions of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said one halacha, he said another halacha. Well, which one are we going to apply here?
Mm-hmm, right.
Now let's take a look at Rashi. I bracketed the Rashi. It's towards the bottom of the page. It's the second wide line in the Rashi. Second wide line. Lema pliga adarava. Rashi's going to say what I said, but he'll explain it a little. Beperik, the Amar Beperikid Anashi, he said it in the last Perik. Kosova Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's of the opinion. Kol min umino vidavar acher she'im mino. If you have 3 things in this pot, min, a prohibited piece of meat, because milk fell on it, and mino, all of the other pieces of meat, which no milk fell on, vidavar acher, and something else, vegetables, lots of vegetables, or pasta, whatever it is. Kilomar, in other words, min de'isur shenit arev im mino. A piece of meat, which was asur, got mixed up with something else that is the same cut of meat, but it was kosher. U'bishe'eno mino. And in that same pot was pasta and vegetables. She'eno mino deheter. Kosher vegetables. Salek et mino deheter kemi she'eno. Mo'il lo levat lo le'isur. The min bimino lo batil. Velo tosefet hu nosaf alav lihiyot shneim isur. You discount the kosher meat completely. Completely. In both directions. You discount it so that it's no longer considered what type of a mixture? Min bimino. But it can't contribute to the shishim against the non-kosher meat. It can't contribute to the non-kosher, to the bitul. How are we going to be mevatel the piece of meat that by the other stuff, by all the heter, the meat will not participate in contributing to the volume of shishim. There's got to be volume of shishim of pasta or vegetables against the piece of meat that had the drop of milk
on
it.
Can you add it afterwards, or it had to be
the... No, it's there. No, you can't add anything. You know that.
It has to be a pre-existing condition.
Yes. Yes. We said that. Ein mevat l'nisu l'chatchilu. We read that in Shulchan Aruch. If you put it in, you're not allowed to eat it. So just make believe it doesn't exist. Make believe it doesn't exist. And then, if it doesn't exist, what are you left with? Pasta and vegetables against a piece of meat. One piece of meat. But now it's min b'she'eino mino. And now if it's shishim, you're allowed to eat everything in the pot. Including the meat. So the... Exactly. So this position of Rabbi Yehuda obviously disagrees with Rav's citation of Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rav, every piece of meat is prohibited. Because you look at it, you don't just discount it, it's there. If it's there, it's min bimino and can't be batel under any circumstances. So this is a very wide gap between opinion one of Rabbi Yehuda and opinion two of Rabbi Yehuda. This is a huge gap. Well, the Gemara said, Rav obviously cited that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that min bimino, but Rav said, I'm quoting a different Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda didn't necessarily say, both in the same case. How Rabbi Yehuda could have said both and apply them to this case, I don't know what Rabbi Yehuda would have said, which one of those two principles I want to use. And it's, again, even Rashi doesn't give us any logic how you have a right to arbitrarily discount 1,000 pieces of meat because I said so. Yes.
I don't actually find this that hard to. I mean, that hard to understand.
Okay, then go explain it to us. That's why you're here for.
Let's say you had a single piece of meat and lots of vegetables.
Everybody says it's min b'she. The mixture is min b'she no mino.
Right. Okay. So the drop of milk fell on it, and the vegetables were more than 60.
There's no problem. You're allowed to eat it.
Okay. So given that fact. Okay, there was additional meat in the pot that no milk fell on.
Correct.
Not relevant.
What do you mean it's irrelevant? It's there.
It happens to be there.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's assume there were no vegetables in the pot. Can you make believe that there was no other meat in the pot? There were no vegetables. Would anybody say, okay, let's just... If you want to just ignore things that are reality, then you don't have to learn chulin. No. Just ignore everything and say, the only thing left in this pot is permissible stuff. No. Make believe it's not there.
I'm saying ignore because it's not relevant to the case at hand. If there were no vegetables, then the crux of the case would be meat against meat.
Good.
But because the crux here is meat against vegetables.
Who said, that's what you're saying. Yeah. Would any man ever say that? That there is a... That the ikar of this pot is the vegetables against the meat? The vegetables are insignificant.
The problem
is the
Why? No, the problem is the other pieces of meat were mixed up with a non-kosher piece of meat. Maybe you will be eating something that you're not allowed to eat because the piece of meat that you picked up might be the one that had the drop of milk on. And you don't want to eat basa b'chalav. What this thing is doing is allowing you to eat everything and eating non-kosher meat.
But if the other meat weren't there...
But it was there. You can't...
Isn't
it because you have a problem?
Okay. Okay.
Well, couldn't it be the transmission?
We don't... You mean Rabbi Yehuda. We don't know.
But maybe it was transmitted in a...
Good. It's possible. Right. I'm saying I don't know how Rabbi Yehuda himself would resolve both. Maybe he said, I apply...
But
he's not... Rabbi Yehuda is not the spokesperson here. It's Rav citing Rabbi Yehuda and Rava citing Rabbi Yehuda.
he's who we're going by, so it's what they're citing.
No, yes. That, in this Gemara, that's how we're going by. That's correct. So all the Gemara said is, it's disagreeing with something that Rabbi Yehuda himself, the Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yehuda cannot explain both positions. That's why it's upliga. It's a debate. Because each one is citing Rabbi Yehuda, and it's a debate because it's difficult for our opinion logically to explain it. It's very, very difficult. Now, the Gemara, I happen to have jazzed up the case that in this pot was a third product, and that was vegetables. The Gemara didn't go that far. It's going to create a different third product, but we'll see. In order for me to continue, I have to tell you there were no vegetables in the spot. What was the third item? The gravy.
But that's part of the meat.
Ha! Let's read two more lines. Amarlei. I'm back in the Gemara. Does everybody have place? Where it says, Omar Le. E dinafal birotav raka. If there is real, rotave is gravy, raka is soft, what we call gravy. Then I can go along with that position. That's the real position of Rabbi Yehuda. Namely, we look at this pot as the following. One piece of meat upon which there is milk. Five pieces of meat where there is no milk. Thing number three is the gravy. So if the volume of the gravy is 60 times greater than the one piece of meat, I make believe the five other pieces of meat don't exist. And the gravy, which is A no me no, which you could argue about, and you could argue and say gravy is not a no me no, but the Gemara does assume that it's a no me no, overpowers the what? The one piece of meat that had the drop of milk, and if there is 60 times the gravy than that one piece of meat, you're allowed to eat everything in this pot. He says, again, Amalei, E dinafal berotev raka hachanami. You are right. Rav says to Rava, I agree with you in that case. I'll agree with you, says Rav, that Rabbi Yehuda's din would apply. Hacha b'mayaskinan dinafal berotev ava. It was congealed. The gravy was in the refrigerator for overnight.
What is nofal? Did the milk fill out?
No. Yes, the milk fell into a pot with one piece of meat where the gravy was not loose gravy, real gravy. It was congealed. I know. It doesn't mean birota. It means in a pot where there is congealed gravy. So congealed gravy, what do you think the Gemara thinks is congealed gravy?
It's like a base.
Correct. Exactly. It's just all min bimino. So what do I have in this pot? Listen to what I have according to Rav. I have one piece of meat with a drop of milk. I have 1,999 pieces of meat and one piece of meat which is gravy. But it's all min bimino, and therefore I believe the whole pot becomes asur.
If it's liquidy,
that's not mino, it's she'eno mino. So do you like that, Svara? Do you think that's accurate? That there is a difference whether the gravy is solid or not? Do you think there's...
Nobody introduced the issue of heat, hot, and cold.
Of course. We don't have to issue it. It must be hot. Because without heat, what happens? No time gets absorbed.
So how could it be congealed?
It's hot.
Thick gravy.
Even if it's from the refrigerator. Now I put this pot on the thing. As soon as I turned on the flame, what happened? A drop of milk fell on. I can create cases. I understand. If I am no connoisseur. I'm not beefsteak. Far from it. And I would say, if you asked me, I would say that gravy has a halacha like meat, whether it's congealed or liquid. That's what I would say. It's meat. Because where do you think it came from? It came from, but it's not really meat. It's taste, it's water that has absorbed the taste and flavor.
In which you cook the meat that's made out of other ingredients.
Right.
Eventually,
right? Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. That's true. Okay.
And it's a different mean. It's not the same thing.
That is.
She does something.
Right. Okay. Okay. I hear. So Rav says, I didn't really challenge Rava. I didn't disagree with Rava. Rava is talking about a different case. His case is talking about liquid gravy. I'm talking about congealed gravy. Congealed gravy. Yeah.
You don't care about what motivated them, right?
No.
Well, I'm sure about
absolutely not.
It has to be about hefset.
No, it does not.
About hefset.
Okay.
It's not about hefset. It's the halacha whether you're allowed to eat it.
But what motivates them to come up with these
otherwise they could just
ideas? No, they are seeking the truth. Once they establish their principles, now, yes, now the difference is, according to one, you're allowed to eat it, the other, you're not allowed to eat it. But they're not looking to make a decision based on economic factors. That is correct. They are not. Correct. That's what Rav said. Rav Yehuda was talking about something else. He wasn't talking about vegetables in the pot. He was talking about gravy in the pot. What type of gravy? Loose gravy. Loose. And in fact, I'll tell you this, because put your seatbelts on, because you're going to fall up on the floor. The halacha gravy of meat is not called meat in halacha in any area. It's called tavshil shel basar. Something that was cooked with meat. Tavshil shel basar. So if I cook meat in this water, in a pot, and there's gravy, and I take the meat out completely, the gravy, according to many authorities, according to Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to drink that, have that gravy together with meat, with milk. You're allowed to have the gravy together.
Who cares?
I know that.
There's,
I'm talking about it's crystal clear. You strain. Just chicken broth. Same thing. You're allowed to eat. The Ramah writes that Ramah says that the custom of Klal Yisrael is to treat Tavshil Shel Basar like Basar. But that's a Chumrah Midrabanan. According to Torah law, even the Ramah agrees that that's not called meat. It's called Tavshil Shel Basar. And almost everybody says, many Rishonim say, even if you can't eat it together with milk, you can have milk right afterwards. And the Ramah pipes up again and says, no, our minhag is to wait 6 hours, even on Tavshil Shel Basar. But Al Pidin, it's not called meat. Yes, they do. That's correct.
Even today?
Svarim didn't never heard. They don't accept the Ramah.
A Svarim will have chickens and can have milk.
Yes.
Do they really do that?
I don't know. I don't remember my son-in-law ever doing that. I don't remember, but that's the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Tavshil Shel Basar is not.
It's so ironic because all this begins with
Also, yeah. So, like the, yeah. You know, we're talking about tachshil shel,
right?
You know, it's the tachshil shel basar is almost analogous to the chalav from the original.
Correct.
The source of halav.
Okay, so. Hold on, I'm going to shock you. We're not going to get to it tonight, but on the next daf, the Gemara is going to say, based on one opinion, that in the Isur of Basa B'chalav, when you take a piece of meat and cook it in the milk is never prohibited. Only the meat. That's because it's... Yes. We don't follow that. But the Gemara is going to cite an opinion, they'll say, that the only thing that you're not allowed to eat is the gedi. But the bachalev, you're allowed to eat the meat, to drink the milk. Even if it was cooked in its mouth.
So we're doing now an exercise in intellectual.
No, we're not.
So what would be the sock today?
We don't ask that question in this room. Because that's a different type of shiur.
That's a
different type of shiur. That's if you want. That's not the type of shiur I like to give, because that's what everybody says. That's all women can handle. It's practical halacha. I'm here to
thank you.
Right to
open your mind.
Exactly, to show you that there's a process. The answer is certainly we Ashkenazic Jews consider tapshur shel basar. We prohibit the milk as well. But the Gemara is alive, and it's, you know, I want to show you. It's sometimes it's shocking, sometimes it is shocking, and there's going to be another big shock in 2 seconds.
So it means you don't get a check minus if you by accident had chicken soup and then later you've been milk you forgot and you don't.
That is correct. Yes.
For
chicken soup. Chicken soup is a lean into anything anyhow. Because according to Torah, you're allowed to cook chicken according to Torah law with milk. You're allowed to. We don't poskin like that. Those who prohibit it. It sounds bizarre that you would take a chicken and deliberately and violate nothing. But that's the halacha.
Because we're thinking about what we practice.
I know. Right. So I just want to show you what your children and grandchildren are spending hours a day in a Beis Medrash, you know, learning. This stuff takes hours. The Rav, I happened to learn this stuff with the Rav when he did Chulin. He did the first parak, which we did, and then he went to the eighth parak also. He must have spent a month on this helmet, on this blot, at least. Yeah, I'm sure. Yes. Okay, now let's continue with the Gemara again. Keep the seatbelt fastened, because you're going to be shocked in 1 second with the Gemara's proposal. Does everybody have the place? So the Gemara said, it's talking about berotav of a thick gravy. Ask the Gemara. Umay kasava. What exactly is running through Rav's mind vis-a-vis another question? E kasava efshar lisochto mutter. Chaticha amayna aseik nevela. There's a question mark after that. I'll translate then read it again. Maze lischot rabotai. Squeeze out. So, if you had a piece of meat upon which a drop of milk fell on, and because it was on a fire, it was absorbed into the meat. But if there was a way for you to purge that drop of milk from that piece of meat, what would be your gut instinct? Does the meat become permissible again? Or does the meat remain prohibited? What would be your gut? Just tell me your gut instinct.
Remains prohibited.
Remains prohibited. Okay. Well, then you will disagree with the line I just read. What? Okay. Purged. That's how you would separate.
Purge out the milk. You didn't purge out the top of the milk.
Well, yes, you did. Once you purge the milk out, you purge out all of the taste as well.
How can you do that?
How do you do that? By applying additional heat.
Exactly. The same principle as kashering a pot. The same excellent. Let me just tell you what happens when you kasher a pot. I take a pot with water, I put in non-kosher meat. Why am I now allowed to use this pot again? Because the next time I apply the heat, what are we worried about? The tom is going to be purged from the wall. Good. So if I fill up the pot with boiling water, what's going to happen? The tom will be purged into the water. Now what do I do with that water? I spill it out. Now I can use the pot again. So now, no one ever said that a pot equals a piece of nevela. No one ever said that. In the history of humanity, no one ever said that a pot is a piece of humanity. It's a piece of nevela. But, what did Rav say happened to the first piece of meat? The first piece of meat which the drop, it became a nevela. Oh, no! If it's nevela, can you ever purge nevela out of? No.
That's what it is.
Okay, right? That's what it is. So, when you have milk falling onto a piece of meat, there is going to be a debate how you apply the halacha of subsequent purging. If you believe that if you were to purge the taste of that milk, that first piece of meat would become permissible again, then it wasn't nevela.
Right. Which it really wasn't
a baby. Aha! So that now.
He's just saying it was complete.
Good. So now you're going to finish the Gemara, and then I'm going to read it. You're going to finish the Gemara. Rav said that the first piece of meat became the vela. So what must Rav hold if you can succeed in purging that first piece of meat from every ounce, every flavor of milk? What must Rav hold? Is it mutter or aser? Correct. That's what the Gemara is going to say. So the Gemara is asking now, my kasavar, what exactly does Rav hold? My kasavar, what does Rav hold? E kasavar, if he holds, efshar lisochto mutar, comma, that if you could possibly squeeze out, purge the taste of the milk, how would you purge the taste of the milk? Keep cooking it. So then, what's going to happen to the tom of that piece of meat eventually? What's going to happen to the tom from that piece of meat? It's going to be purged, and what's going to happen to the taste? It's not going to
disappear.
It's going to get spread all over the other pieces of meat in the pot. And then beefsteak ain't going to be able to taste it because it's so diffused. It's not concentrated in one piece. Well, there's nothing here that's prohibited. Therefore, ask the Gemara, Chaticha amai na'aseit nevela. Why would Rav have made the statement 6 weeks ago that what? That the first piece of meat became a nevela? Ela kasavar, must be that what does Rav hold? What does he hold? Efshar lisochto asur. That even if you were to succeed in purging the taste from that piece of meat, that piece of meat forever remains nevela. Forever remains nevela. So, therefore, the Gemara seems to be establishing a link as to whether or not you apply chaticha nasas nevela or not actually depends on whether you hold efshar lesochto is mutter or asur. And the Gemara says there is a machloikis. De itmar, Rav, the Rabbi Chanina, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Amri, efshar lesochto asur. Shmuel, the Rabbi Shimon, the Rebbe, the Reish Lakish, the Amri, Efshar, Lesochto, Mutter. Efshar lusoch dal mutter. That as long as it is you are capable, and it's hard to see the dynamics of it. I can't see the chemistry or the physics of it, but it's a halachic fact that if you continue to apply heat, something is going to be purged. Something is going to be purged. And I'll give you the ultimate case to demonstrate this. The ultimate. Just one second. I'm going to give the ultimate case. Does meat have a lot of blood in it?
Yes.
Good. Why is it that if you roast meat, you're allowed to eat the piece of meat without salting it? Why?
Because the heat is causing the blood. You see it run down. Right?
Good. But that's only the blood that came out.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the blood?
But even when you salt it, there's still some blood.
Okay, so I'll get to that.
No.
The answer is because as long as blood has not left its original cavity, original area, you're allowed to eat all that blood you want. It's not prohibited. So if you eat raw meat, like there are some mishaguim, like some people grow fish, some people grow meat, they don't have to salt it at all. Nothing. And not violate the law of eating blood, which is on the penalty of kares. Only if you cook meat in a pot. Why? What's going to happen when you cook meat in a pot with water? The blood is purged, and then what happens? It's reabsorbed into the meat. So it's no longer in its original cavity. That's why before you cook meat, what must you do? You must salt it. Then there is a second, I'm not going to elaborate, just to answer Tova's question. The halacha is, once you salt the meat, all other blood is permissible. Why? I'm not going to tell you. That's the halacha. It's a matir. It allows you to eat the blood that was even purged and reabsorbed. You're allowed to, as long as you did the malicha.
But if you roast the meat in an oven, you don't have to.
If it's sitting in a pan, no, it depends where it's sitting. As long as it's not sitting in its own liquid.
If you're grilling.
Correct. There used to be stores. Everybody remembers these. Nicht Hantike's Kinder. Hantike Kinder don't remember that it was possible to buy meat that was not salted, not kosher yet. Of course. And there would be a sign in the butcher shop: this cannot be cooked. It can only be broiled over an open fire. It would say that. Or the butcher would tell you if you're buying it. He'd tell you to. Right? That's the way we eat liver. 100%.
You can eat raw liver.
Yes, you can.
Enjoy it.
Yes.
If it's
kosher. No. Doesn't need kosher. Yes.
Can I just say something about nevela?
Yeah.
There's definitions of nevela.
Nevela is an animal that dies without kosher shechita. That's
so
all.
He said it's nevela. He didn't mean it is nevela. He means it's like nevela.
Correct. So it has the halachic status of nevela.
So if you purge it, you're taking that away.
No. You can't purge the taste of nevela. Nevela is an isur.
But this isn't a real nevela.
It is. But he treats it like a nevela. Make believe.
This is a different status.
No. That's not what he says.
When he said it's nevela, it's because of a certain thing. It wasn't.
Yes.
If you purge it.
No.
Isn't a real nevela.
That's not what Rav believes.
But it is
Rav,
a real nevela.
I know. But he said, treat it like a real nevela. I don't care if you can purge the prohibiting agent. I don't care which is the milk. Just like you can never purge the isur of nevela, I believe this piece of meat became a heftzer shel isur, a piece of meat that is usur. End of discussion.
But it makes sense.
Yeah. No. The answer is this piece of meat cannot be sold. Because how did it become nevela? Through basa b'challa. But all the other pieces of meat can't be nevela. Yes.
Okay, just to clarify for myself, hopefully for other people as well. So there is a group of people that say that it is Nevela, but there are a group of people that say that it's not Nevela.
Correct. And what is the Gemara depending it on? Whether halachically purging the original milk that was in that, if it halachically is successful and it now says there's no more milk in it, which was the prohibiting agent, and then it's okay. Then then that piece of meat never became nevela.
So in other words, they're giving it a different status.
Correct.
Okay.
So the Gemara wanted to know, what did Rav hold? Because he said definitively, what happened to that first piece of meat? It's nevela. Says the Gemara, yeah, he has to agree with something that he said elsewhere. It's a good thing that he agrees with himself. What did he say? Efshar lesochto asur. That even if it is physically possible to purge the milk out of the meat by continued application of heat, that first piece of meat will remain asur ad bias goyel tzedek. That's it. No matter what.
I think an Isha B'mitbach would say the same thing. Actually, no one would touch that meat. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, so tonight we saw several new principles. And then, in order to see, you know, what the halach is, then if you want to not see it, first you have to read the Rambam, and then you see the Shulchan Aruch. And then there's the people, there are commentaries, the Ramah, and then there is the Shach, and the Guin, and you know, there's so many, till we come down to our practical halacha, there are five or six different people you have to check to see what we actually do. But here now comes something that you're concerned with. Sometimes when there is a machloikis, and there is enormous financial loss, you have a right to rely on someone else. That idea was posited by many Rishonim. Why did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi record a minority opinion in the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi knew that if the majority are against one guy, why do they quote the Mishnah? Dalach's not like him. So the Ravid says it's to establish the right of a posek under certain conditions he can rely on the minority, even though the halacha is like them, obviously like the majority. There are situations where you have, yes, where there's communal policy is one thing, communal, but individuals, you know, you can handle somewhat differently. And that happens many times, many times. All right, we'll stop here. I want to wish everybody a good summer. I just want to know if you have any. This has been probably one of the most difficult topics that we've ever done in the Mishnah class. So you decide amongst yourselves if you want to continue, you know, in next year with this, or go on to something. Okay, okay. It's certainly.